You're listening to a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream us online weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. To add your voice to our discussions, give us a call at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRIMPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Kerri Miller. This is NPR News. We're talking politics today, as we usually do on Mondays. The Political Junkie is here. And then later in the hour, we're going to dig into the geographic politics of trade. The Upper Midwest finds itself right in the middle of this, so more on that in a moment, and I'm going to want to hear from you on this. But first to Ken Rudin. Welcome, Ken. Good to talk to you again on a Monday.
Good morning, Kerri.
I'm really interested, Ken, in how you see the geography of these tariff threats. And I guess I'll define that by asking, how is President Trump balancing a promise to be more protectionist of steel and aluminum, for example, with the fact that China's tariffs, as they retaliate, could hurt voters here in the Midwest who helped elect the president? How's he calibrating the damage there?
Well, it is mixed. I mean, the reaction is mixed because when the president first announced the tariffs on steel and aluminum, many Democrats around the country applauded that. Like Sherrod Brown, who's running for re-election to the Senate in Ohio, said it was a great thing. Connor Lamb, the Democrat who was elected to that special congressional seat in Southwest Pennsylvania, said he supports the president's tariffs as well. But then when China talks about retaliating and talking about, you know, tariffs on soybeans and corn and pork, the political ramifications are not only is Wall Street furious about this and reacting poorly to it, but Republican candidates for Congress around the area. Think of, congressional candidates in Minnesota, Wisconsin. There's a big Senate race in North Dakota.
Right.
When farmers are being hurt by this, Republican candidates are going to take the fall. And Donald Trump obviously has to balance that between his rhetoric about punishing China and protecting farmers. That's a conflict there.
One of the things I wonder about, though, is what the overall perception is of what the president is trying to do, and then the individual, well, this is going to damage my own economy. I still think the president gets points, and I've heard this in interviews with farmers, gets points from farmers who say, I like his overall thinking on this. I hope that he thinks about, you know, my situation, our situation as soybean producers individually. But I like this overall approach that he's taking to China, and it's high time. Do you hear that, too?
Well, what I do hear is for all the people who criticize President Trump for having, you know, flip-flopped on positions over the years, things on tariffs, he has not flip-flopped at all. He's been very consistent well before he was president, well before he launched his campaign for the presidency. He's talked about how these countries, notably China, have been ripping us off, in his words, you know, about unfair trade practices and rigging the economy. So those who support U.S. jobs and U.S. steel and aluminum and things like that, they say that is sticking to his guns, sticking to his playbook, and sticking to this America First policy that they like. But again, as we point out, the farmers may not like this, Wall Street may not like this, and Republicans who usually support free trade and oppose protectionist policies are not happy with it either.
Ken Rudin with us as he usually is on Mondays. And if you have a question for him, 651-227-6000. And I'm on Twitter at KerriMPR. I saw this. You mentioned the Wall Street bankers and investors are concerned about where this potential trade dispute is going. And I saw this quote in an article about the advice that the president is getting on trade. It went something like, 99.99% of economists believe tariffs are bad for the American economy, and the other 0.1% is Peter Navarro. And Peter Navarro, as we know, is the guy who is advising the president, right? So his voice matters on this.
Well, that's a great quote. And also Larry Kudlow, who's now the president's chief economic advisor, the president's previous chief economics advisor, quit over the institution of the tariffs. He said that's anathema to everything we believe in and what I believe in. And even Larry Kudlow, who opposes these tariffs, are also now out defending it. So, look, the president is really his own top economic advisor, just like he's his own Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, National Security Advisor. And what Donald Trump wants really goes with that, despite the advice he's getting from an assortment of people.
So have you seen, Ken, just in the last 2 weeks when, as you've noted, there's more of this, he's going to direct these different factions of the administration? I mean, have you noticed some change in the way the president's communicating or the way decisions are being made?
Well, I mean, we still see cabinet officials being fired by tweet. We still see the president showing disdain for the diplomacy. I mean, a while back, we saw Rex Tillerson trying to work for diplomacy for North Korea while he was in Beijing, and the president would tweet, say, "Rex, don't waste your time." That hasn't changed. If anything has changed, the president seems to be getting more and more of an administration of people, of cabinet officials who think exactly like he does. Now, in fairness, you do want, and look, if I was the president of the United States, which I hope to be one day, but I mean, I still would like to
too.
Have.
Me too.
For me or for you?
I think that's it. For you. No, I really hope Ken Rudin is the president someday. Yeah.
And you know who I would mention in my inaugural address,
Minnesota
Nixon.
Public Radio. Oh, Nixon.
Yeah, of course. But anyway, I mean, I would want somebody who sees eye to eye with me. The problem with Donald Trump is that he doesn't have anybody who has the courage or the desire to say, look, you may be off on this. And when people do that, either if you're a member of Congress, you get challenged with a primary challenge by another Republican, or you get dismissed from the administration.
You know what I'm thinking about? I think we need a special Nixon quiz. When you come for the state fair, Ken, what do you think?
We are going to have so much fun.
It's going to be great, but I don't know. Maybe it's got to be all about
Nixon. And we could do it every 4 years. I could say four more years. It'll be great.
All right. Call for you here from John in Omaha, Nebraska. Hey, John. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Ken, I'm curious about, it's easy to talk about the short-term loss or gain politically or economically with the decisions Trump is making, but the long haul view with basically all of the Western world selling their economic soul to China has been that China has gained a foothold in tech, has gained a foothold in the world economy, certainly in geopolitics. I'm just wondering, like, how does the tariff situation play out over the long haul if, say, they actually are implemented? This so-called trade war does seem to blossom into something. Is there a net gain or loss for the United States and or for China? And how does that play out geopolitically long term?
Well, you know, in the long term, that's a good question, John. I think in the long term, there may be some advantage to the United States because, first of all, China buys far more from the United States, sends stuff, far more stuff to the United States than we buy from China. So basically, in the long run, China needs the U.S. as a partner if they're going to continue to be growing as a world power. And so I kind of think that any kind of tariff on Chinese goods or any reluctance from the United States to purchase Chinese items will hurt them in the long run. Of course, in the short term, it seems to be nobody seems to want to blink, but I kind of think, I mean, I don't know what it's going to be in the long run, because we don't know if China is somehow going to acquiesce in changing its policies or just stand toe-to-toe with Donald Trump and the United States on these policies. But I think in the long run, it may give China something to think about, and I think that may be the reasoning behind the president's decisions here.
Call here, Ken, from Peter in Falcon Heights. Hey, Peter, you want to take issue with something Ken said, yes?
Yeah, especially in Minnesota. The stereotype of farmers as being red, our two most agricultural congressional districts are both have DFL congressmen. The WAPO just produced a report that showed that of corn-producing counties, that's not all agriculture, but particularly in the north, the majority of them went for Clinton. And the New York Times calls this area the Upper Mississippi Anomaly because our rural areas do vote blue.
That's right.
And so I thought that's a bit, especially on Minnesota Public Radio, it seemed a bit off base.
What do you think, Ken?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think we're saying different things here. There are a lot of districts that look. We know that Minnesota has gone Democratic for every year, you know, going back until ever since 1972 when I forgot the name of the guy who was reelected. But I mean, ever since
could it be Nixon?
Then,
I think it was.
Oh, that's right. It was Nixon.
It was Nixon.
Right. But I mean, Minnesota's gone Democratic every other time, and you think there are many, many districts that I mean, Donald Trump almost carried this state of Minnesota, and in the first congressional district where Tim Walz is running for governor, Republicans really think it's one of the few districts in this state that they can pick up, you know, open seats. But I do feel, I mean, at least my understanding of it is that any kind of tariffs by China on soybean and pork and corn and things like that hurts Republican candidates. Look, these are definitely Democratic districts. They've been that way since I think the mid 1980s. Republicans did make a comeback in 1994 and again in 2010. But for the most part, these are Democratic seats. But I'm just saying that if the Republicans are going to make any gains in that dairy, that upper Midwest there, I think the tariffs could hurt them and hurt the Republicans in the short run.
While we're talking upper Midwest here, Ken, and this seems like weeks ago, but that judicial special election in Wisconsin last Tuesday. And you know, Governor Scott Walker, looking at the results of that and looking at the way the Democrats turned out, tweeted out that night, "Tonight's results show we are at risk of a hashtag blue wave in Wisconsin. The far left is driven by anger and hatred. We must counter it with optimism and organization. Let's share our positive story with voters and win in November." You know, Ken, he's up for re-election. What's he really worried about?
Exactly what he said. Well, it's twofold. First of all, he is trying to, I mean, there was a great article in the New York Times, I think it was today or yesterday, that talked about how Republicans are using the fear of impeachment.
That's today. Yeah.
That's today, right. If the Democrats take over, you know that Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the first thing they're going to push for is impeachment. That's hopefully for the Republicans, gets the Republican, the pro-Trump base riled and excited enough to come out and make sure that doesn't happen. But I think one of the reasons Scott Walker is warning this is because look at the elections we've seen in the past couple of months with Alabama, with the special election in Pennsylvania, with these special elections around the country that either Republicans used to hold or were hoping to win, and they didn't because Democratic enthusiasm was far superior to that of the Republicans. And so what Scott Walker is warning about, what Marco Rubio is talking about in Florida and other Republicans around the country, certainly Jeff Flake, who's retiring in Arizona, that the Democrats are really enthused about this. They're excited about this. They're recruiting more and more candidates. More and more women are running for Congress, mostly Democrats, than ever before in history. And a lot of it is a reaction to Trump. So what Scott Walker is saying, that if you relax, if you do any kind of relaxing before the election in November, it's going to be at the Republicans' peril, and you can't let that happen.
I guess I found the phrase that the far left is driven by anger and hatred. You know, I get the let's organize. That seems to be not, you know, think of the far left however you like. Those don't seem to be the qualities, I think, when most politicians argue about avoiding the far left.
You know something, I'll be honest with you. I do speak to people who are not politically driven 24/7 the way some of us are.
Yeah.
And many of them are not Republicans or Democrats, but they do see a hatred. Now, I see a hatred coming from the White House directed at the media and certain institutions in this country that just get me very, very sad. But I still see, you know, whether it's Tom Steyer or people like that, I see a real, such a distaste and even hatred for the president that it's really going both ways. The anger and animosity since January of 2017, whether it's more on the Republican side or not, it is coming from both sides.
I get it. Okay, so he is probably referencing the president. I guess I didn't realize that.
I think so.
Let me call, grab a call here for you from Lauren in Minneapolis. Hey, Lauren, what are you curious about?
Yeah, hi. I want to know what effect will teacher walkout strikes in red states have on legislative elections?
Ken, did you catch that?
Well, you know something? That's a great question. I never thought of that. I mean, what's going on in Oklahoma now, what has gone on in other red states, I never saw it having a political effect. I do see it's interesting that usually it's in these blue states where I think the teachers union, well, what's left of the teachers unions are far more powerful than they are now. But the fact that they're having it in red states, it just shows that a lot of these budget crunching and budget cuts do have consequences. And from everything I've seen, most people seem to be supporting the teachers, that they are underpaid. And how do you pay anybody more than teachers? I mean, teachers and firemen, I mean, to me, seem to be like, you know, and police, they seem to be the people who deserve every penny they get. And as long as people feel that way about teachers, I think that, you know, that it transcends politics. It transcends red and blue states. I think it just shows that there is an anger out there about people, you know, about priorities, and that teachers should certainly be part of the priority.
What's the political button of the week, Ken? Have you unveiled it yet?
No, I haven't done but you know something? I do have a button that just says, I think something, support the Environmental Protection Agency. And the thought that Scott Pruitt runs an agency that has the words environment and protection in the same sentence, that is mind blowing.
When do you unveil the button of the week? Don't you usually have a special one that you focus on and tell the history of, or not?
Well, I do. It doesn't even have to always be topical. I mean, sometimes it'd be a great story. Like one of my favorite buttons is a picture of it's a picture button. The top part of the picture is the color brown. The bottom of it is the color pink. And it says IS in the middle. And you look at that button and say, well, what does that mean? And actually, it's a brown is pink button. Governor Pat Brown was a pinko when he ran against Richard Nixon in 1962. But I mean, there are buttons that have great, great stories, and that's certainly one of them.
Good to chat. I'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, Carrie.